This feature of the Science News Radio Network is coming to you from our studios in Dallas, Texas. Science News is on the air right now.
This is the promise of tomorrow, where people and industry keep up with the business of emerging and nanotechnologies. The fields covered in this series of programs will include energy, defense, aerospace, medicine, semiconductors, and more. For the next hour, Colonel Mason will introduce his experts, and you'll be on the cutting edge of the promise of tomorrow.
So glad to have you back with us as we explore the exciting world of the business of emerging science, nanotechnology, and open innovation. Those of you listening on radio can also hear us commercial-free online and webcast at promiseoftomorrow.biz. Exciting show today. We're going to visit the Den of Strangers, get more wisdom from someone a lot of us never heard of, visit our fountain of useless information we have here on the set in the second half of the program, and of course at the end of the program, listener comments and the voice of reason. Right now, though, to tell us about the lineup for today's show, here is Jack Bishop.
Jack Bishop here for the Science News Network. PitCom is coming, ladies and gentlemen, and that's an exciting event that most people in the greater world know very little about. Mike Gregg is going to be presenting a short course there at PitCom. Mike joins us from San Diego, and thank you so much for being here with us. Mike, tell us a little bit about you and a little bit about PitCom.
So I work at Pfizer, and the name of my group is called Protein Dynamics, and that's kind of where the idea for this course title came from. It's a group that just kind of came into being about 2 years ago, mainly due to the changing in the pharmaceutical industry. There's been a lot of turmoil, and so we were trying to figure out what our group should do that is new, can't be outsourced, and would be kind of cutting-edge technology that could also contribute to drug discovery. And we found that within our industry, there's a lot of study of protein, but not of actual protein dynamics and how proteins change over time.
Now, you just told me something that I didn't know. I thought once a protein was a protein, it stayed the same.
It does not. So there's a lot of people are familiar with X-ray crystallography, and there's several other techniques to analyze proteins, which are all excellent techniques, and there's a lot of discussion about those at PitCom too. But the problem with those techniques is they're static techniques, and so they basically take a picture. So it'd be like watching a snapshot from a football game as opposed to watching a video of a really exciting play. And so what we want to do is capture the changes that the protein makes and how that affects its function.
Now, I imagine this has all kinds of implications for us as far as medicines are concerned, correct?
We hope so.
Well, what are some of the things that you hope will come out of this?
So one of the things we found as we're studying proteins, especially I work in the oncology unit at Pfizer. In oncology, there tends to be quite a bit of mutation, which leads to resistance of medications. And so sometimes these mutations have to do with the change in the sequence of the protein, and then that changes the conformation of it. And so what you can happen is when a protein, a drug recognizes one shape of a protein, and then the mutation can make it flip around and have a different type of shape. And so that's one of the things that we're looking into, to see in the equilibrium state, how do things shift to a shape that we can attack with potentially different drugs or else predict how things will mutate.
Now, they say that cancer, and I think we all have had somebody in our families who have suffered or succumbed because of cancer. They say that cancer is the scourge of the contemporary times, and yet we're looking at more and more treatments. My sister last year was diagnosed with lung cancer at stage 2, which 40 years ago would have been a death sentence. She's recovering quite well now. So the work that you're doing, besides being cutting edge, is so important. Now, as we said, you're going to be doing a short course about what you're doing at PittCon. And by the way, I want to remind everybody, we're talking about this wonderful conference that's coming up. It's organized by the Pittsburgh Conference on Analytical Chemistry and Applied Spectroscopy. I knew I'd have trouble saying that. Applied Spectroscopy. What is Applied Spectroscopy, as a matter of fact?
So it's Applied Spectroscopy.
And, thank you.
I've been doing it for years, and it takes me a while to get it correct.
Now, what is it, though?
So spectroscopy is basically the study of changes of light, the light spectrum. But it's you know, it's basically an analytical chemistry conference. So people who don't know, I guess the science that I guess the lay people who are my friends, I always tell them, if you watch CSI when they go into the lab and work on all those instruments, that's what analytical chemistry is.
So now you've put it in perspective for me. I know what you're talking about. This, what you call a short course. Why is it a short course?
Well, our particular course, it's a half-day course, so it's a four-hour course as opposed to, say, 1 week long or 1 day. There's the one-day short courses, two-day short courses at PittCon. They have quite a variety of courses at PittCon, and I've taught in pretty much all the varieties. We're teaching the shortest of the short courses, which is the half-day course.
Now, we should point out that registration is now open, and if you want to register, if you're someone in the field or someone who's interested, you can register at www.pittcon.org, and you have to register now before February 10th, and if you do that, you get a $150 discount, and proceeds from PittCon found science education and outreach at all levels, kindergarten through adult. So that's the reason why my grandkids know more about this stuff than I do. But they include science equipment grants, research grants, scholarships, and internships for students and teachers and professors as well. Now, Mike, how did you get into this field?
Pretty much started out with my AP chemistry teacher in high school. We were doing an experiment in December. It was the torsional features of sucrose. And basically, we mixed all these ingredients together, and we had this long, sticky white chain and a long, sticky red chain of chemicals. And then he told us to twist them together and make a hook out of them, and it turned out we made candy canes. And I thought, well, that's pretty cool. Science is all right. Then we did the typical things where we'd blow up the natural gas balloons in the lab and things like that. So he made chemistry a lot of fun.
Did you ever blow up the lab like I did?
No, we try not to do that, but...
Good for you. Good for you. When we start talking about research into new areas, I think we always, those of us that are lay people, always have an image in our mind of this being just rather cold and impersonal. Is that image anywhere near reality?
Nope, I don't think so, because you know, proteins or whatever else you're studying, it's, you really got to get to know them, and you know, some of the things, especially, you know, in our class, we're talking about protein dynamics, and you learn that different proteins kind of have their own personalities, the way they want to behave, and you know, with the dynamics of proteins, they can flip around and behave very differently all the time. And so if we think of it that way, then there's a lot of personality involved in that.
I would imagine, now that you've put it in that perspective for me, talking with Mike Gregg, he's going to be conducting a short course at the PittCon conference that's coming up in March. That's March 2nd through 6th. It's going to be happening at the McCormick Pace Center in Chicago. When you go around the country and you meet with fellows in your field, do you ever get surprised about the things they're working on or the things they're not working on?
Not so much the things people aren't working on, because there's plenty of things to not work on. I'm always amazed at the quality of what goes on in other labs. Ben Bolaños, who's my co-instructor, he and I, we teach a lot of conferences around the world. And one of the things I always tell people, other scientists, about traveling, I think it's really important, because as you sit in your own lab, you can become convinced you're pretty good or you know a lot. But when you get out in the world and you see what other people are doing, it's just amazing. And so PitCon's a great conference because you do get people from all around the world. And just seeing what some of the other people are doing in all the different fields, we focus on mass spectrometry, so we look at that the most. But PitCon's nice because it gives us the opportunity to get outside of our main area, which is mass spec. And, yeah, it's amazing what everybody else is doing. And I think if you don't get out there and you don't see what other people are doing in the world, you're really hurting your own research.
You know, one of the things that bears that out, there was recently a documentary on Einstein that was on the Discovery Channel. And they said that the worst time of his life was during World War I, when he was just formulating some of his theories. And the war was going on, and he could not travel out of Germany because of the war. And the first thing he wanted to do when the war ended was go to a conference and meet up with other people in his field of endeavor and field of study to see what they were talking about. So without that kind of interchange between you researchers and scientists, no telling what would be lost. Correct?
That's absolutely correct. So I have one thing in common with Einstein, I guess.
Well, also, you can say the field of study that you're involved in better than I can. Mike, you know, I was postulating in my mind at one point as you were talking that the implications of what you're working on, just grandiose. I mean, we talked about cancer to some degree, but also the changes in proteins and what that might mean for us might lead to treatments for all kinds of things. Diabetes, HIV and AIDS. The list, as I went through my mind about things, seemed almost endless. This might be the most important research as far as being applied to the lives of the average person walking around on the street that I can think of. Are you getting the kind of support that you need from the public and from the private and public sectors?
I don't know about support from the private and public sectors, because I don't know that the detail we're working on, I don't know if everybody quite understands. I mean, everybody obviously understands these disease need a lot of research to figure out. I think within our own world here in the pharmaceutical world, people are starting to more and more understand these are very important things to work on. One of the techniques we'll talk about is hydrogen-deuterium exchange mass spectrometry, and that's a technique we apply across the board, not just oncology, but every different disease state we're looking at when we're looking at the various proteins.
Some would say that when we start talking about pharmaceutical research, that we never take into consideration the amount of time and the amount of money that it takes to bring some of these theorems to practicality. Can we do a better job of informing people what it takes for a guy like you to bring us some new discovery?
Well, right now the average drug takes about 8 to 12 years to come to market and cost over about $1.5 billion to $3 billion per drug. So one of the things we do at Pfizer is I work with the local community colleges and high schools and local universities, and we'll have teacher seminars or counselor education days where they come in, and I give a talk about the pharmaceutical industries and talking about all those different things, like what it takes to get a drug to market, how the current conditions of research and everything else affect that, research grants and all those types of things.
Talking with Mike Gregg, he's going to be presenting a short course at PitCon. He's going to be talking about his field of endeavor, which is, I guess it could be summed up by saying how proteins change. If we could do that in layman's language. And want to remind everyone that registration is now open for PitCon. You can register at www.pitcon.org. Register before February 10th, and you get a $150 discount on the program, which happens March 2nd through 6th of 2014. Mike, I'm going to perhaps close out our interview with this question. If a young person, after hearing this bit that we've just done, if a young person, say they're high school senior, maybe an undeclared major in college as a freshman, what should be their next step in learning more about what you're working on and what your field is about?
Well, most labs I know are very happy to have people come visit the labs or sit down and talk with them. We have high school teachers, like I said, and guidance counselors, and all the time I'll have people bring their students by, give us a call, talk to us, give lab tours, things like that. And so when they actually can come to see what's going on in a real working lab, it kind of opens their eyes, and you know, a lot of people say, hey, this is awesome. And just as important, some people say, ooh, I don't want to do that. And you know, it's always good to have a little experience to see what you'd like to be doing in the future.
Now, you know, Mike, I've got to ask you this before we go. I said that's going to be the last question. I just thought of one more. What would you like to see come from your work?
Obviously, cures for cancer.
Pretty simple.
Yep. Actually, one of my there's always the quote about, you know, on people's deathbed, they never wish they worked more. And I have a buddy, Lance Goulet, who worked here with Pfizer at Meet, and he said, you know, people say that quote, but on the other hand, if I die of cancer, I will wish I was with the lab a lot more. So I always thought that's a great quote he had.
Hey, we've spent some time with Mike Gregg. He's going to be teaching this short course, as he calls it. Your partner on the course is...
Ben Bolaños.
Ben Bolaños. And it's going to be happening at PitCon. Proceeds, by the way, from PitCon go towards funding educational efforts. And if you heard something that you like, Ben, have you got an email address that people could contact yet?
Yes, it's michael.gregg@pfizer.com.
Michael, thanks so much for being with us here on the Science News Network.
Thank you.
Thanks a bunch, Jack, for introducing us to your guest. Mike is a fascinating guy. We're going to look forward to seeing him at PitCon. And when he and I were talking off the air, he was explaining about his half-day course. He says he's going to introduce the attendees to mass spectrometry methods for analyzing protein dynamics. He said the proteins could rapidly undergo dramatic changes in primary and in their structure and are key to their cellular function. And he was explaining to me that understanding this flux in protein state is critical in understanding the ways to modify or modulate protein behavior. He plans to introduce a collection of mass spectrometry-based essays that were developed to better understand protein dynamics and these temporal effects on biological pathways. Discussion of structural and cellular dynamics is going to include how to utilize HDX-MS data for detailed structural dynamic analysis, and how to measure protein turnover rates in cellular systems. And, of course, he's going to touch on advanced methods in protein characterization and qualification, and ways to measure interaction within biomolecular complexes. More importantly, he says that he wants to discuss why we need to incorporate protein dynamics into our daily research. Daily research. Pretty important stuff. So your interview with Mike has been extremely entertaining and interesting, and gives us an idea of what we can expect when we go to PitCon this year. And thank you for all that great information on how we can register and save money in you know, for early registration. The audience for the course, if people are interested in going, is ideal for analytical chemists, biologists, PhD students, postdocs in any branch of biology or life sciences, lab managers, group leaders, or anyone else interested in how mass spectrometry can play a role in analyzing protein dynamics. Knowledge of mass spectrometry is helpful for the person attending this class, but he says it isn't necessary. So, anyway, look forward to seeing Mike at PitCon, and thank you, Jack Bishop, very much for introducing us to your guests. Here on the Promise of Tomorrow radio program, the Science News Radio Network, Promise of Tomorrow, of course, can be heard commercial-free at promiseoftomorrow.biz.
And we have with us today, we're really happy with us today, Delilah McGurvey. She's a professor at the University of Massachusetts at Lowell in the Electrical Computer Engineering Department. She's also director of a research center that she founded called C-Minds. That's C-M-I-N-D-S. And we're going to ask her to tell us all about that. But, so welcome to the program, Delilah.
Okay, thank you.
First of all, tell us about this research center that you founded, C-Minds, and what it stands for, C-M-I-N-D-S, and what you do there.
Okay, the C-Minds Center stands for Computer Machine Human Intelligence Networking and Distributed Systems. It's a long title, but it stands for different areas of research that will all lead to research in computational intelligence, and the idea is to be able to understand how humans and animals behave so that we can build more intelligent systems and sensors. And so there are four different labs and that are connected, and the basic idea is to us to understand all aspects of the research that will lead to, for example, distributed computational intelligence, whereby no single computer can compute fast enough or deal with large enough data. So we need to have more than one computer talking to each other, try to make sense out of a situation that humans cannot make sense of. So they are large applications these days that we'd be needing such research. And of course, computational intelligence comes from the fact that we want to be able to predict things that we would not be able to know right now, but as a result of sensing large amounts of data. Our days, many of us have heard at minimum of the word big data. Means a lot of data collected, but nobody knows what to do with it.
Oh, yeah.
In a very smart way, sense, that will give us some ways to detect things that we would like to know beforehand by just sensing a few things. So applications to make it simpler to grasp, for example, in the life sciences. We all are hearing about whole genomes and what we can do with them so that perhaps we can predict what medicine will work better for one individual but not with the other one, or can we use information from the genomes to be able to detect who is having this type of cancer or is predisposed to having it, things like that. So when we deal with those genomes, there are huge amount of molecules that are part of the DNA that will be impacting the way we behave and every single cell in our body. So to be able to do that type of computations, we need to have smart algorithms, smart computers, and most probably computers that will be networked to talk to each other.
Okay, hold that thought. We'll be right back. Okay, as we walk to the break at the half hour, we're going to pause at the door of the Den of Strangers, where we keep locked away all of the wisdom of mankind. In the Den of Strangers, will we meet today?
Clancy. Tom Clancy. The difference between reality and fiction is that fiction has to make sense.